Track 7. Queen Bee is a symbol of hope. Norfolk Wildlife Trust Ambassador Nick Aitchison sees hope for the natural world in a small bee.
I sat down to write an hour and a half ago. Nothing has come to me. I've written this column for 8 years now, so it's natural, I suppose, that sometimes I should struggle to find new things to say, new ways to describe the changing seasons in our Norfolk landscape. But that's not why I'm struggling. I know exactly what I want to say, or what I need to say. You see, these past 8 years have been an almost unrelenting tide of disastrous news for nature, for biodiversity and our environment, which means disastrous news for us. I want to shout, I want to scream. We have to change our ways. We can't go on destroying the planet, which is our only home. Can't we see that everything we need for health and happiness, for life, comes ultimately from nature, from having a safe environment in which to live? While I was ranting to myself just now, railing against my powerlessness to influence change, two things happened. Checking my social media, I saw an article from The Guardian. It described a 4-year study by 82 scientists from the United Nations, rather clumsily named Intergovernmental Science Policy Panel on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services. The study found, and I don't like to say I told you so, that if our species is to have a good quality of life in the future, we need to move beyond market-based assessments of the value of nature and the environment. For us to thrive, the scientists said, we also need to value nature's cultural, spiritual, and emotional importance to humanity. We need to accept that the hard-nosed economics of the global north have failed us, have pushed the fabric of the natural world on which our existence literally depends to the point of failure. Consulting 13,000 scientific and sociological sources, the authors concluded that we need to listen to different ways of describing, understanding, and valuing nature. We need to accept that all around the world, though largely in the global south, societies other than our own have objectively done a far, far better job at stewarding natural resources, protecting natural landscapes, and living alongside other species. Sometimes, well, often, I reflect that the things I do, writing, speaking, and broadcasting about my love of nature, are pointless. That in the face of catastrophic, well-documented declines in biodiversity and the imminent, equally well-documented meltdown of our environment, writing jolly articles on nature is nothing less than self-indulgence. And then, reading an article like the one in The Guardian, I'm reminded why I do it. For if we leave our relationship with nature to be decided by economists and politicians, we're doomed. To misquote Oliver Hardy, here's another nice mess they've gotten us into. And this is why I write. Instead of politicians and economists telling us how markets should value nature, we need to tell economists and politicians what nature means to us. We need to write and sing and dance in nature, make our leaders and decision makers understand that nature is our home, our temple, and our birthright, that we cannot survive without her, that we will not. It doesn't matter how nature moves you, that is exactly the conclusion of the eminent scientists behind the UN study. What matters is that you're moved to act, that you have a relationship with nature that's worth you fighting for. For many of you, nature is a place of fascination and of study. Some of you set moth traps and get up early to identify your catch, hoping for a vagrant from the continent. Some of you spend your weekends identifying plants, fungi, or insects, sending your records to county recorders, adding to our understanding of Norfolk's priceless wildlife. For others of you, names are not the point. Names or no names, nature is your habitat. Some of you may meditate in nature, sitting in silence in the dawn, touching something greater than yourselves. Many of you run in nature. Others swim, I do myself, sometimes in the sea and sometimes in the river behind my house. Some of you harvest food from nature, judging which fungi are safe to eat, which leaves are fresh, bearing the cultural knowledge of our forebears into the future of the landscape. Most of us just walk, where for millennia our ancestors have walked, in the places which the politics and economics of the global north have failed to value. The second thing which happened while I sat struggling to find words to write was that a bumblebee flew into my kitchen through the open back door. It was a buff-tailed bumblebee, our largest common species, and a queen. In British bumblebees, for now at least, though climate change is affecting wildlife fast, young queens are the only bees which enter hibernation. All the rest, workers, males, and last year's queens, must die. The bright young queen who came into my kitchen had no doubt already mated. Already she is bearing next year's fertile eggs. Like every other young queen bumblebee, she's busy gathering the energy she'll store as fat to get her through the winter and fuel her when she emerges in the cruel cold of early spring to lay her eggs. The young queen bumblebee in my kitchen, it seems to me, is a symbol of defiant hope. Only weeks ago, she herself was just an egg. With no experience of the spring or what it holds, she's labouring to fatten up, to find the energy for an evolutionary destiny she cannot comprehend. She's fighting for her place, her genes' place, in an unknown and unstable future. She and her genes are worth this fight. Here are my words. They're all I have, all I can offer to the fight. But fight I will. My bumblebee and her unlaid eggs are more than worth it.